Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 6th of February, recording at 9:25 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. Stock markets recovered some of their nerve, helped by a China leash effect, and the performance has been stunning in China. This week, and up every day except for a small decline yesterday and base formation breakout. Elsewhere, European markets, these have steadied above or near their November lows and pushed to, in many instances, to the highest levels you've seen in the last couple of weeks. Wall Street has also steadied above its November lows, with the NASDAQ leading the way, and again closing higher than we've seen for a number of days. So a solid performance here by stock markets. Nothing spectacular. Well, I don't know. I would say the breakouts in China and Brazil are worth a few hurrahs. And long-dated government bonds still under pressure. And that's been the case for a while now, with the U.S. bonds being particularly long-dated government bond prices being particularly weak. In currencies, the dollar, which weakened a bit yesterday, has done so again here today, and the yen is somewhat weaker still. And that's interesting. More on that in a moment. And we have, I should say that the dollar had been firm before it started to weaken in the last couple of days. Now, industrial metals have been reasonably steady this week. Copper better than that. Strong gains in here today, putting it up 12.5 cents to 162.50. And precious metals have been in pretty good form, least of all gold, which has been quiet near its September and October highs. Currently bullion trading at 9.11, but silver has forged ahead, last shown on my screen at 13.07, and let's see, palladium, strong gains in here today, and that's a breakout from a trading range. Silver had broken out a little bit earlier, and platinum poised to break out here, closed at 12.03, well, 12.02.90. Okay, now, what else? Crude oil, a little bit easier in here today, 39.99. Natural gas, a little bit firmer. Agricultural commodities, mixed to steady. More steady than mixed, I should correct myself on that and have. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, a quick review of what's happened recently. As you know, we had the year-end rallies, and then all those traders came back after the Christmas and New Year holidays, and they saw one strong day on the 2nd of January, and then markets started to buckle. It's really as if a lot of traders, hedge fund managers, people on the prop desks at banks looked at the patterns and said, well, we've got trading ranges and we're up near the higher side of trading ranges. And the last time this happened, markets weakened and fell back towards their lows. And so they sold short. That's my surmise at any rate. And indeed, we did see stock markets pull steadily back, causing the weakest performance on Wall Street in January in living memory, according to some of the people who keep those stats. And the European markets, for the most part, went down and tested their lows. And I think there was probably, if anybody who would have been short would have been, of course, looking for a retest of the lows and hoping that those lows might actually give way. Well, it hasn't happened, and with the exception of Switzerland, which has the financial weighting and the pharmaceutical weighting, and neither have been particularly good recently. And then it's got Nestle, which is the biggest weighting of all in that SMI index, and that hasn't been doing very well. With the exception of Switzerland, they have rounded right around and firmed up. And I think this is changing the psychology now. And we'll get a number of people who said, well, if they're not going to go down, they're going to go up among the traders at any rate, and look for retests of the highs that we saw in late December and early January. Overall, point I've emphasized over and over again is that the more these indices range sideways, maintain their ranges, in other words, the more those patterns will look like base formations. And most people are highly skeptical about this because they say, well, the way a bear market unfolds is you get a downward move and then it pauses and you get a little bit of a technical rally and it ranges for a bit and then it resumes a decline. So what's different this time? Well, markets are a whole lot lower this time, following all that climactic selling between May and into October of last year. The interest rates are lower, the stimulative packages have continued and are bigger and more creative. It's an all-out effort. Every country's pumping money. And also, I think that, the preoccupy while the news has been fairly diabolical, and there are lots of concerns over corporate profits, understandably, that the depression talk, in my view, has been overdone. And this is a recession, and it's a tough one. It's a balance sheet recession, credit problems, problems of insolvency in the Western markets at any rate. But that's not the whole world. And you can bet that the Obama administration would like to see stock markets hold their ranges. And some of this quantitative easing that's being talked about is all about retiring dodgy assets and helping to bring confidence back into the markets, and hoping to increase the speed with which money circulates in the economy, unfreeze the economy, and they're going to succeed. Now, again, as I've said before as well, we can argue long into the night about whether this is a worse solution than just letting the whole system crash and then reemerge, hopefully like the phoenix from the ashes. But that's not going to happen. This is a solution. You can put inverted commas around that. And it is going to work after a fashion. I think the trade-off may be that the result is we get less of a blowout on the downside, and then we get a slower phase of growth thereafter over the medium to longer term. But that's better than the depression that people have been fearing. Now, Wall Street still remains the epicenter of global economic risk, in my view. That's something I've said for over 2 years. And if the U.S. stock market breaks downwards through those November lows for more than a day or two, let alone if it gets a run on the downside, as most people have been expecting, maybe a contrary indicator there. But if that were to happen, then I don't doubt that given the importance of the U.S. market psychologically and the well-demonstrated force of the leash effect that I've often referred to, that we would see other stock markets drag lower. But let's consider a continuation of what we have right now, ranging markets on Wall Street. If that were to continue, then we would have a neutral leash effect. And one of the fuller money themes is that against that background, the markets with better prospects would do exceedingly well. And among major markets, they would be led by China and Brazil. And have a look at those charts. They're impressive. Now, again, I've often talked about a lengthy convalescence, big base building phase for a number of these stock markets. And I see no reason to change that view, but they won't all have the same length. As I've just mentioned, a neutral Wall Street extending its trading range, neutral leash effect, then the Chinas, the Brazils, the Chiles, the Israels, the Colombias, and possibly the UK can do considerably better. The other Asian markets would certainly do considerably better. So that's a real possibility, particularly now that we've seen China and Brazil complete these small base formations, small type 3 base formations. And again, conversely, just to repeat the point, Wall Street breaks down, it'll drag those markets back into an extended phase of base formation development overall, in my view, and it would probably drag the European stock markets to new lows. Now, let's consider another scenario, which I think is possible, which would be part of what we have been looking for ever since that climactic activity in October, when I said that was had set the stage, that it was so climactic that we should see a ranging recovery, rally, and reversion to the mean in terms of the 200-day moving average best seen on weekly charts. If you've been listening to the audios, you've heard me say that practically every day that I've recorded. Now, therefore, what happens if investors on seeing November lows hold and the U.S. indices turn up, as we've seen in the latter part of this week? What happens if the U.S. indices, for instance, not only get back up to their early January levels, but push through them? Well, that, I think, could quite possibly ignite a bigger rally than anybody is expecting at present. Again, all part of that reversion to the mean rally through the year end and into the well into the first quarter of 2009 that we have forecast. And once that would be a combination of short covering, and it would also be new money coming in off the sidelines. And you know there's plenty of money on the sidelines, that's for sure, given all the government printing and given all the deleveraging and selling that we have seen in so many accounts. So a lot of that would get sucked in. But if we did get that extremely good rally, then I think it would be followed by a fairly decent pullback later in this year and right-hand extension phase in terms of base development. I would say that while most people expect the grim scenario of another major leg down on Wall Street and most of the world's other stock markets, we do not. And we think that's a risk that will continue to decline with time. Okay, in terms of tactics and how to play it in here, though, I think it's very much a baby steps environment where you don't pay up for anything. You buy low and you sell high within ranges. And eventually, though, if we get the better rally, or when we get the better rally, then we'll have trending markets, and a different tactic, more of a trend running tactic, will be necessary in that environment. But weigh it all up, and this is a long way from the end of the world that that people were talking about. Okay, what about these long-dated government bonds? I don't like them. There is the risk, of course, that governments come in to support their own long-dated government bond markets. But I don't like them because yields don't offer good value, and there's just too much supply clogging the system, and all these reflationary efforts will create future inflation. It's not a near-term risk. It's probably not a risk throughout 2009, possibly not even in 2010, but at some point it will be inflationary. It'll obviously be inflationary when we get the next synchronized global economic recovery. And I think we will get another synchronized global economic recovery, although I can't put a date on that. I'd be surprised to see it this year, although you might see some of the so-called green shoots occurring, and in the second half of the year, but again led by the fuller money theme areas. Now, Bernanke and others have said, well, the way you deal with that next inflation threat is to tighten up very quickly. And that's an obvious point. But will they actually do it? Politically, that might not be the easiest decision to make. But we'll see, and that's a long time away. We don't have to worry about it right now. What about currencies? Fundamentally, I think the dollar is highly vulnerable. I think the yen's vulnerable. The Japanese economy is in recession, along with a lot of other economies. Japan needs a weaker currency, wants a weaker currency. The only reason the yen strengthened than the dollar strengthened, I certainly don't think it was anybody saying, well, these are really quality assets, particularly the dollar. It's a begging bowl currency, as a sterling. In other words, you've had huge trade deficits that have to be financed by the willingness of creditor nations to invest in the paper of the U.S. and U.K. So I think the dollar, which benefited, and as did the yen, from the deleveraging, well, benefited. They were pushed up, in other words, by the deleveraging that took place. There is a reasonable case to be made for the possibility, probability, that most of that deleveraging has been completed. And that is what a weaker yen and dollar would indicate to me. And these look like two tired currencies to me. And I'm playing it accordingly, as you know. In the commodities, so like the precious metals, they will, if we get a better stock market rally, that will siphon some funds away from precious metals, I suspect. But a weaker dollar could help prop them up, although it's been sort of paradoxical recently, in that we've seen the precious metals sometimes strengthen with the dollar and sometimes weaken as the dollar weakens. But again, it's it's sentiment that moves these things, and people respond to other themes. There is a view that's been aired in the markets that investors have no other choice but to go into precious metals. Well, that's never the case for very long, but net it all out, the technical action's good. I think that I like this actor. It's I do. I've got my main trading long positions there, and I've got some investment long positions in the sector. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if platinum doesn't double over the next few years. And there's an outside chance that precious metals could do spectacularly well. Remember, they led when we had the reflationary efforts back in 2001 and 2002 and early 2003 to offset the 2001-2002 recession. And the precious metals are leading again here today. And we also see firmer industrial metals, and they were among the leaders. Now, this is something that hadn't happened in most earlier cycles, in that they were highly cyclical, the industrial commodities, and tended to move late in an expansion cycle. Well, that all changed earlier in this decade due to the demand primarily from emerging markets, led by China, obviously, for all that infrastructure development. Now, everybody's talking about infrastructure development, and not least President Obama. So I wouldn't be surprised if this was the case again. And these industrial metals are below the cost of production for many producers, so not surprisingly, they're mothballing some operations. And most of them have the cash to be able to do that and wait it out. And it sets up the stage for another boom. I'll put it this way, if the precious metals and the industrial metals show that leadership, then that will validate our commodity supercycle hypothesis, which I always said would require a global recession to be seriously disrupted. Where you've got a seriously bad global recession, which has seriously disrupted that cycle. But as things start to improve, our contention is that demand for the industrial resources picks up fairly quickly. A certain amount of that interest will also spill over into the agricultural commodities, but they're much more sensitive to crop developments. Okay. What else? Crude oil. Well, it's certainly one of those industrial commodities, but it was a late one to peak in terms of its peak back in July of last year. We see the preliminary evidence of base formation development. I have no idea how long that will carry on, but a good few months at least, I would suspect, which has been the case following downside blowouts that occurred after the earlier spikes that we have seen in petroleum prices over the last 40 years or more. And I think that's pretty much it, a wrap for today. So it's been a good week if you are interested in fuller money themes, as I know many of you are. And it's nice to be making some money again. And I wish you all a very enjoyable weekend. All the best.